unless you take them. You've been believing your own mythology. I think you're getting this thing.
That's a hard pill to swallow.
Well, there's one thing harder to swallow, and that's what you've been living, and how you put yourself at the mercy of other people.
Yeah, it sure doesn't feel good.
Let's look at the next one.
I want Uncle Ralph to bail me out.
Okay, so Uncle Ralph should bail you out, is it true?
Yeah, if you were an honorable man, yeah.
Why is that? Whose money did you invest?
Some of his, some of mine.
Okay, yours and his, but let's look at your money. You invested it in the stock tips that you gave yourself after hearing them from your uncle.
Right.
And he should bail you out?
Well, if you put it like that, no.
Good. So what does he have to do with any of it, aside from sharing with you what he believed to be true at the time?
Nothing.
Correct. Nothing.
But the thing is, right at this moment, it's very mental to me. It's all in my head. I still feel the anger.
Just stay with the process. If it seems mental right now, that's the way it's supposed to be. How do you react when you think the thought that he should bail you out? Or that it would even be for your highest spiritual good if he bailed you out?
I feel all this anxiety and terror and the bad stuff that I'd rather not have.
And you can focus on that and you don't have to bail yourself out.
Right.
You just focus on the thought that he's supposed to do it and you tell yourself why you're right and you never win. Because you can't win that. The truth is that he's not supposed to bail you out. He didn't invest your money. You did.
Right.
But putting the focus over there on him, rather than on what's true, keeps you from knowing and therefore living your integrity, which is to bail yourself out. You know, there's nothing sweeter than you bailing yourself out. Who got you into this? You did. Whose job is it to get you out when your uncle says that he won't? Yours. If Uncle Ralph does it, then you don't ever get to realize that you can do it.
That's true.
And then when Uncle Ralph says no, you resent him and continue to focus on him, and you don't bail yourself out because you're not in a position to notice that you can do that. And you die yelling, "It's not fair. What did I do to deserve such a heartless uncle?"
I agree with you. It's true.
So give me one good reason to hold on to the mythology that he's supposed to bail you out, when the truth is that he hasn't.
For him, it would be a little bit more than lunch money.
That's a good one. What I discovered right away was that there were only three kinds of business in the universe, mine, yours, and God's. And if you don't use the G word, put the word nature there or reality. So this is a test of discernment. Whose business is his money?
His business.
That's it.
I'm making it my business. That's what hurts.
Yes. Now here's what I noticed. When I mentally go into your business, I start getting the stress inside me. Doctors call it names like ulcers, high blood pressure, cancer, all of it. And then the mind attaches to that, and it creates a whole system to hold up the first lie. Let your feelings tell you when the first lie begins, then inquire. Otherwise, you get lost in the feelings and in the stories that lead to them. And all you know is that you hurt, and that your mind won't stop racing. And if you inquire, you catch the first lie through noticing your feelings. And you can just stop the mind by putting the story you're attached to on paper. There's a portion of your stressful mind stopped, even though it may still be screaming in your head. Now put the statements up against inquiry. Ask the four questions and turn your statements around. That's it. You're the one who sets yourself free, not your uncle. You bail yourself out, or you're not going to get bailed out. Haven't you noticed?
I agree with everything you said. It's right on the beam. It's just that at this point in time, I'm not in touch with my own ability to bail myself out.
Well, in this country, we have bankruptcy. If I put myself in it, I get myself out of it. And if I file for bankruptcy, I eventually pay every debt I owe, because living this way offers me the freedom I'm looking for. I don't care if it's a dime a month. I, too, act as an honorable person, not because I'm spiritual, but because it hurts if I don't. Simple.
Yes, that's the reason. I agree.
People think, when I make a whole lot of money, then I'll be happy. I say, let's skip that part for now and be happy from here. You got yourself into it? Your uncle had nothing to do with it so far.
I'm with you on that. I'm realizing that he didn't do it. I did it. And in a certain way, it's kind of thrilling to sit with. And it's also like, oh, shit.
Yes. Welcome to reality. When we begin to live in reality and see it for what it is without our old stories, it's incredible. Look at this for a moment, without a story. It's all reality. God, I call it God because it rules, it always is what it is. And the myth of an uncle's responsibility would keep me from the awareness of that. It's so simple. Okay, so whose business is your uncle's money?
His.
And whose business is it what he does with his money?
His.
I love it.
I'm clear on those two now. I wasn't before. I really thought it was my business.
And did you sign your inheritance over to him?
Yep.
Okay. Whose money is it now?
His.
And whose business is it what he does with his money?
His.
Don't you love it? Life is so simple when we move back into our own business.
I don't feel very good about it now.
Sweetheart, when we realize something this basic, sometimes we're like a newborn foal. At first, our legs won't even work. We just get wobbly and have to sit down. What I suggest is that on the other side of the session, you go somewhere and sit with it for a while and just be still with what you're realizing. It's big. Let's look at the next statement.
Okay. Uncle Ralph should pay off my debts and give me $100,000.
Wonderful. I love it. Now turn it around.
I should pay my debts and give myself $100,000.
This is very exciting. And if your mind isn't in his business, you would be amazed at the space that opens up for you, the power that opens up to solve your own problems. It's, well, it can't be told. It just can't be told. But it's the truth that sets us free to act clearly and lovingly. And there's just excitement in it. Okay, let's do another turnaround. I
should pay my debts and give myself $100,000.
And give my uncle $100,000.
Oh, man.
Whatever it is that you owe him.
I should pay my debts. You know, I probably do owe him another $100,000.
So there it is.
I should pay my debts and give my uncle $100,000. Wow.
Yes, for your own sake. Even if the man has billions and billions of dollars, it doesn't matter. It's for your sake.
I agree. I absolutely agree with that.
Yes, so he should give you $100,000. What for?
Well, that would make all of these 2.5 years of activity a basic wash.
And then you'd be happy?
Well, no.
How do you react when you believe the thought that he's supposed to give you $100,000?
I'm sore.
Yes. Who or what would you be without that thought?
Free.
Let's look at the next statement.
I need Uncle Ralph to bail my ass out from financial ruin. This is hysterical.
Okay, now turn it around.
I need myself to bail my ass out from financial ruin.
You see how you've begun to end your own suffering? People lie on their deathbed at the age of 90 saying, it's all my uncle's fault. We don't have to do that anymore. And that's the offering here. Judge your uncle, write it down, ask for questions, turn it around. And then send him a thank you note. How do we know it's for your highest good that your uncle hasn't bailed you out? He hasn't. You're being given a great gift, and when you step into the truth, that gift becomes visible and available, and you end up like a little boy, new.
I would like that.
I really appreciate your courage. It would be wonderful to call him and tell him the turnarounds in your own language. For example, you might say, Uncle Ralph, every time I call you, I want something from you. And I want you to know I do that. I'm clear about it. And in no way do I expect you to bail me out. I've come to see that your money is yours and that I owe you and that I'm working on it. And if you have any suggestions, I'm open. And I'm sincerely sorry for what I've done. And when he says he has some great stock tips, you can say thank you and make your own decisions and not blame him if you do use them and lose money. You gave yourself those stock tips.
Yes. In fact, I even asked him for them because I had come into some money and I knew he had a lot, so I wanted to know what he thought I should do with it.
The greatest stock market you can invest in is yourself. Finding this truth is better than finding a gold mine.
That thing about calling my uncle with what you just said, as much of it as I can retain, feels incredibly threatening to me.
Of course. You get to be wrong and he gets to be right.
And I don't even know that he'd sit still to listen to it.
No, you don't. Okay, let's look at the next statement.
I don't ever want to listen to his stock tips or owe him money again. Or take his petty, irate, childish shit.
You might do all this again, if only in your mind. There might also be some residue left in you. And I can tell you that when you let go of one thing, everything falls like dominoes. Because concepts are what we are working with, theories that have never been investigated. These concepts may appear again, and this is good news, when you know what to do with them. You may expect something from him again, and it's going to hurt if it's out of alignment with your integrity.
That's true. Yes, that's actually true. It's hard to admit, but it's true.
Yes, but it's easier to admit it than not to admit it.
Yes. I don't know if I'm there yet, but...
You could play the scenario over again in your mind, and if there's something left that you're attached to, if something hurts, it will plunge you back into the work. So read it just as you wrote it, but say, I'm willing to.
Okay. I'm willing to listen to his stock tips and owe him money? I guess I am. I am willing to listen to his stock tips and owe him money. And I am willing to take his petty, irate shit.
Yes, because if you feel pain around it, it will put you back into the work if you want some freedom. Now, I look forward to...
Wait a minute. I'm confused now.
Just do it. Just trust the process. I look forward to...
Okay. I look forward to listening to his stock tips and owing him money and taking his petty, irate shit.
Yes, because it's possible that you'll play that scenario over again.
Not likely, because I don't think he'd ever give me a tip again, and I don't think I'll ever have any money to play the market again. Not that I want to anyway.
You might play the scenario in the middle of the night when you wake up in a cold sweat.
Oh.
That's when these things are often done.
Right.
And you can just grab your pad and pencil... And judge your uncle again, and clean yourself up. Every concept that has ever existed is inside you. It's not personal. After all these thousands of years, the thoughts are still in each of us, waiting to be met with some friendship and a little understanding finally, rather than with pills and running and hiding and arguing and sexing, because we don't know what else to do with them. When the thoughts arise, just meet them with some integrity. He owes me. Is it true? Can you absolutely know that it's true? How do you react when you think that thought? Ask yourself, and who would you be without the thought? You would have an uncle you care about, and you would be responsible for yourself. Until you love him unconditionally, your work's not done. Close your eyes now and look at your uncle trying to help you. Look at the guy, without your story.
Do you want to know what my experience was?
Yes.
I'm still feeling the pain of his verbal abuse.
Okay, verbal abuse. Turn it around. I'm feeling the pain.
I still am feeling the pain of my verbal abuse.
Toward him, in your mind.
I'm still feeling the pain of my verbal abuse toward him in my mind?
Yes.
Maybe everyone else here is getting this. I'm not.
What's an example of his verbal abuse?
Marty, you don't know nothing. I told you to do it this way, and you did it your own way.
Okay, let's stop right there. Could it be that he's right? And that's what you don't want to hear? That's not verbal abuse. We call it verbal abuse when someone tells us the truth about ourselves and we don't want to hear it. That is, we think we don't want to hear it. Deep down inside us, we hunger for the truth.
Okay, I see that. That's true.
There's no such thing as verbal abuse. There's only someone telling me a truth that I don't want to hear. If I were really able to hear my accuser, I would find my freedom. The you you're identified with doesn't want to be discovered because that is its death. When someone tells me that I lied, for example, I just go inside to see if they're right. If I can't find it in the situation they've mentioned, I can find it in some other situation, maybe 20 years ago. And then I can say, sweetheart, I am a liar. I see where you're right about me. In this, we found something in common. They know I'm a liar, and now I know it. We join and connect. We both agree. I can find those pieces of who I am from them. This is the beginning of self-love.
That's right. Oh my God, I never saw that.
If your uncle says something that hurts, he's just revealed what you haven't wanted to look at yet. The man is a Buddha. These people that we're close to will give us everything we need so that we can realize ourselves and be free of the lie. Your uncle knows exactly what to say because he's you, giving you back to yourself. But you say, go away, I don't want to hear it. And you say it mostly in your mind. Because you think if you got honest with him about it, he might not give you money or affection or validation.
He's never given me any validation.
Good. I'm loving this guy. He leaves that for you to do, and he just holds his truth.
If you met him, I don't know if you'd think he was an enlightened being.
What I know is that he knows the things about you that you haven't wanted to look at yet. And the truth is, he can guide you to the things you really do want to look at. If you go to a friend and say, oh, my uncle has treated me so badly, your friend will say, you poor fellow, that's really a shame. What I say is, find an enemy. They won't give you that sympathy. You go to your friends for refuge because you can count on them to agree with your stories. But when you go to your enemies, they'll tell you straight up anything you want to know, even though you may think you don't want to know it. Your uncle can give you material that's invaluable if you really want to know the truth. Until you do, you have to resent your uncle.
You mean that everything I'm defending against is the truth that I don't want to see? Holy shit, no wonder I've been seeing my uncle as an enemy. This is amazing.
Uncles have never been the problem, and they never will be. It's your uninvestigated thinking about your uncle that's the problem. And as you inquire, You set yourself free. Your uncle is really God in disguise as an uncle. He's giving you everything you need for your freedom. Angry at corporate America. A question I often hear is, if I do the work and I'm no longer fearful for the planet's welfare, why would I get involved in social action? If I felt completely peaceful, why would I bother taking action at all? My answer is, because that's what love does. The fear of not being fearful is one of the biggest stumbling blocks for people beginning inquiry. They believe that without stress, without anger, they wouldn't act. They would just sit around with drool running down their chins. Whoever left the impression that peace isn't active has never known peace the way I know it. I am entirely motivated without anger. The truth sets us free, and freedom acts. When I take people to the desert, they may see a tin can lying under a cactus and say, "How can anyone do that to this beautiful desert?" But that tin can is the desert. It's what is. How can it be out of place? The cactus, the snakes, the scorpions, the sand, the can, and us, all of it. That is nature, not the mental image of the desert without a can. Without any stress or judgment, I notice that I just pick up the can. Or I could tell the story that people are polluting the earth and that there is no end to human selfishness and greed, and then I pick up the can with all the sadness and anger I'd be feeling. Either way, when it's time for the can to move, I notice that I'm there, as nature, picking up the can. Who would I be without my uninvestigated story? Just happily picking up the can. And if someone notices me picking it up and my action seems right, they may pick up another can. We're already acting as a community beyond anything that we've planned. Without a story, without an enemy, action is spontaneous, clear, and infinitely kind.
I want corporations to start taking responsibility, to start respecting life, care for the future, be in support of the environment in third world countries, stop abusing animals, and stop thinking only about money.
So, they think about money only. Can you really know that that's true? I'm not saying that it's not. I'm not here with a philosophy or the right or wrong of it, just inquiry.
Well, it seems like that.
How do you react when you believe the thought that they only care about money?
I get angry and frustrated, and I don't want to support them as people.
Yes, even though you do support them. You use the products they put out, their electricity, their oil and gas. You feel guilty as you do it, yet you continue, and maybe just like them, you find a way to justify your action. So give me a stress-free reason to believe the thought that these people only care about money.
Well, that way I make a difference. I at least do what I can do.
I hear from you that when you believe that thought, you experience anger and frustration. And how do you live when you think that you've made a difference and they're still cutting down trees? You think that only through further stress can the planet be saved. Now give me a stress-free reason to believe that thought.
There is no stress-free reason.
No stress-free reason? So who would you be without this thought, this philosophy, that they only care about money?
Peaceful, happy, maybe clearer.
Yes, and maybe more effective, energized, less confused, and in a position to make a real difference in ways that you haven't even imagined yet. In my experience, clarity moves more efficiently than violence and stress. It doesn't make enemies along the way. And therefore, it can sit comfortably at a peace table, face to face, with anyone there.
That's true.
When I come at a corporate official or a logger, pointing my finger and in any way blame him or his company for destroying the atmosphere, however valid my information is, do you think he'll be open to what I'm saying? I'm scaring him with my attitude, and the facts can get lost. Because I'm coming from fear myself. All he'll hear is that I think he's doing it wrong. It's his fault, and he'll go into denial and resistance. But if I speak to him without any stress and total confidence that everything is just the way it should be right now, I'm able to express myself kindly and with no fear about the future. Here are the facts. How can the two of us make it better? Do you see another way? How do you suggest that we proceed? And when he speaks, I'm able to listen.
I understand.
Sweetheart, let's turn it around and see what you would experience with that. Turn around statement number one. Say it again, with you and all of it. I
want to start taking responsibility. I want to start respecting life and care for the future. I want to be in support of the environment and third world countries, and I want to stop abusing animals. I want to stop thinking about money only.
Does that ring a bell?
Well, I really feel like that's what I'm working on all the time.
And wouldn't you rather work on it without the frustration, stress, and anger? But when you come at us, the corporate people, self-righteously, all we see is the enemy coming. When you come at us clearly, we can hear from you what we already know in our hearts about the welfare of the planet, and we can listen to you and your solutions without feeling threatened and without having to be defensive. We can see you as a loving and attractive person, as someone easy to work with, someone to be trusted. That's my experience.
Well, that's true.
War teaches only war. You clean up your mental environment, and we'll clean up our physical one much more quickly. That's how it works. Let's look at the next statement on your worksheet.
Corporations should be caring and give back to the planet, use their money to support environmental groups, build habitats, support freedom of broadcasting, should wake up and start thinking about tomorrow.
So they don't care. Can you really know that that's true?
Well, again, it seems like it, doesn't it?
Not to me, and I understand where you're coming from. How do you react when you think the thought they don't care?
Sometimes I get really depressed, but it's good because I also get very angry. I get very motivated and work very hard at making a difference.
How does the anger feel inside you?
It hurts. I can't stand what they're doing to our planet.
Doesn't all that anger feel violent inside you?
Yes.
Anger is violent. Feel it.
But it motivates me to act, so it's good to have some stress. We need it to get things moving.
So what I hear from you is that violence works. Violence is the way to a peaceful solution. That doesn't make sense to me. We humans have been trying to prove this point for eons. What you're saying is that violence is healthy for you, but that corporations shouldn't use it against the planet. Excuse me, corporations, you should stop your violence and treat the planet peacefully. And by the way, violence really works for me in my life. So, you need violence to motivate you. Is that true?
No. Those bouts of anger leave me depressed and wiped out. Are you saying that without the violence, I would be just as motivated?
No, sweetheart, that was you. What I would say is that I don't need anger or violence to accomplish things or to motivate myself in any way. If I were to feel anger, I would do the work on the thought behind it. This leaves love as the motivator. Is there anything more powerful than love? Think of your own experience. And what could be more motivating? I hear from you that fear and anger are depressing. Think of yourself when you love someone. How motivated you become. Who would you be without the thought that you need violence as a motivator?
I don't know. That feels very strange.
So, sweetheart, let's turn it around. I
don't care. Yes, that's true. I haven't cared about those people. And I should be caring and give back to the planet. I should use my money to support environmental groups, build habitats, support freedom of broadcasting. I should wake up and start thinking about tomorrow.
Yes, and if you do that genuinely, without violence in your heart, without anger, Without pointing at corporations as the enemy, then people begin to notice. We begin to listen and notice that change through peace is possible. It has to begin with one person, you know. If you're not the one, who is?
Well, that's true. That's very true.
Let's look at the next statement.
I need them to stop hurting and destroying, to start making a difference, and to respect life.
So you need them to do that. Is that true?
Well, that would be a great start.
You need them to do that. Is that true?
Yeah.
Are you going inside yourself? Are you really asking? You need them to clean it up. Is that true?
Well, I don't need it for my everyday survival or anything like that, but yeah, that would be great.
I hear that, and that's what you need to be happy.
That's what I want. I know what you mean, but it's so...
You know, this brings about incredible terror inside you. How do you react when you think the thought that this is what you need, and corporations are doing... Oh my, they're doing what they do. They're not listening to you. You're not even on their board of advisors. They're not accepting your calls. You just get their answering machines. How do you react when you think the thought that you need them to clean it up, and they don't?
It feels frustrating, painful. I become agitated and I get very angry, very scared.
Yes, a lot of people won't even bring children into the world because that thought runs through them without investigation. They live in such fear when they're attached to this belief. Can you see a reason to drop the belief? And I'm not asking you to drop it.
Yeah, I can see many reasons, but I'm really afraid that...
If you drop the belief, what would happen?
I wouldn't care anymore.
And I would ask you, if you didn't believe this, you wouldn't care. You would lose all caring about the environment. Can you really know that that's true?
No.
If we don't suffer... We won't care. What a thought. How do you react when you think the thought that stress is caring, that fear is caring? How do we react when we believe that thought? We become the champions of suffering, but only for a good cause. Only in the name of humanity. We sacrifice our lives to suffering. The story goes that Jesus suffered for hours on the cross. How many years have you lived with those nails through your body?
I understand.
Let's turn it around, sweetheart.
Okay. I should stop hurting and destroying.
Stop hurting and destroying yourself in the name of cleaning up the planet. When the planet is cleaned up, then I'll be peaceful. Does that make sense? Your pain, is that how we're going to clean up the planet? Do you think that if you hurt enough, if you suffer enough, someone will hear you and do something about it?
Okay, I see it. I need to start making a difference, and I need to start respecting my life.
Yes, yours. It's a beginning.
So I need to start respecting my own life.
Yes, take care of yourself. And when you find peace, when your mental environment is balanced, then be the expert who can go out to balance the planet, fearlessly, caringly, and effectively. And in the meantime, do the best you can, just like the rest of us, even as corporate people. How can an internally imbalanced, frustrated woman teach others how to clean up their act? We have to learn that ourselves first, and that begins from within. Violence teaches only violence. Stress teaches stress. And peace teaches peace. And for me, peace is entirely efficient. Well done, honey. Nice work. Would you rather be right or free? Chapter 7. Doing the work on self-judgments. 1 year for his birthday, I bought my grandson Race a plastic Darth Vader toy because he had asked for it. He had just turned 3. He didn't have a clue about Star Wars, even though he wanted the Darth Vader toy. When you put a coin into Darth Vader, you hear the Star Wars music, and Darth Vader's heavy breathing. Then his voice says, "Impressive, but you are not a Jedi yet." And he lifts his sword as if to emphasize the point. After Racy heard the voice, he said, "Grandma, I'm not a Jedi," and shook his little head. I said, "Honey, you can be Grandma's little Jedi." And he said, "I'm not," and shook his head again. A week or so later, after I gave him the toy, I called him on the phone and asked him, "Sweetheart, are you a Jedi yet? Are you Grandma's little Jedi?" And he said, in a sad little voice, "I'm not." He didn't even know what a Jedi was. He wasn't even asking. And yet he wanted to be one. So the little guy was taking orders from a plastic toy and was walking around disappointed at the ripe old age of 3. Shortly after this, I was invited by a friend to fly over the desert in his plane. I told my friend about the Jedi thing and asked if Racy could come with us. He said yes, smiling over an idea he had. He made arrangements with the ground crew, and as we landed, we heard a voice over the cabin speakers announcing, "Racy, you are a Jedi! You are a Jedi now!" Racy rolled his little eyes in disbelief. I asked him if he was a Jedi yet. He wouldn't answer me. When we got home, he ran straight to Darth Vader. He dropped in his coin, the music began. With the heavy breathing, the sword rose, and the deep voice said, "Impressive, but you are not a Jedi yet." That seemed to be the way of it. I asked him one more time, and he told me, "Grandma, I'm not." Many of us judge ourselves as relentlessly as that plastic toy played its recording, telling ourselves over and over what we are and what we're not. Once investigated, these self-judgments simply melt away. If you've been following the instructions and have done the work by pointing the finger of blame outward, you will have noticed that your judgments of others always turn back toward you. When those turned around judgments feel uncomfortable, you can be sure that you've hit a belief about yourself that you haven't investigated yet. For example, "He should love me" turns around to, "I should love myself." And if you experience stress with that thought, you may want to take a look at it. As you become fluid with the 4 questions and turnarounds, you begin to discover for yourself that the work is equally powerful when the one you're judging is yourself. You'll see that the you judge is no more personal than everyone else turned out to be. The work deals with concepts, not people. The 4 questions are used in exactly the same way when you apply them to self-judgments. For example, let's consider the self-judgment, "I am a failure." First, go inside with questions 1 and 2, "Is it true? Can I absolutely know that is true, that I'm a failure? My husband or wife may say so, my parents may say so, and I may say so. But can I absolutely know that it's true? Could it be that all along I have lived the life I should have lived and that everything I've done has been what I should have done?" Then move on to question 3. Make a list of how you react, how you feel physically, and how you treat yourself and others when you believe the thought, "I am a failure." What do you do specifically? What do you say specifically? Do your shoulders slump? Do you snap at people? Do you go to the refrigerator? Continue with your list. Then go inside with question 3. Experience what your life would be like if you never had this thought again. Close your eyes and picture how you would be without the thought, "I am a failure." Be still as you watch. What do you see? The turnarounds for self-judgments can be quite radical. When you use the 180-degree turnaround, "I am a failure," becomes I am not a failure, or I am a success. Go inside with this turnaround and let it reveal to you how it is as true as, or truer than your original statement. Make a list of the ways in which you are a success. Bring those truths out of the darkness. Some of us find this extremely difficult at first, and may be hard-pressed to find even one example. Take your time. If you really want to know the truth, allow the truth to reveal itself to you. Find three successes each day. One could be, I brush my teeth. Two, I did the dishes. Three, I breathed. It's a wonderful thing to be a success at being what you are, whether you realize it or not. Sometimes replacing the word I with my thinking will bring a realization. I am a failure becomes my thinking is a failure, especially about myself. You can understand this clearly when you go inside to answer question four. Without the thought I am a failure, aren't you perfectly fine? It's the thought that is painful, not your life. Don't get stuck in the turnarounds as if there's a right or wrong way of doing them. If a turnaround doesn't work for you, don't worry. This is as it should be. Just move on to the next statement, inquire sincerely, and let the turnarounds find you. Afraid of life. I love the following dialogue because it shows that the work can move fluidly as a loving conversation. When you facilitate others or yourself, you don't always have to use the four questions in a strict order or any prescribed way. This is particularly helpful when someone, you or the person you're facilitating, is frightened and the painful thoughts are hidden from view. At the beginning of this dialogue, Marilyn, the sweet woman on stage, was so bashful that she kept holding the worksheet in front of her face to hide from the audience. Yet by the end of our conversation, she was glowing with confidence and love.
I kind of didn't follow the rules because I wrote about myself.
Yes, you definitely didn't follow the rules. And that's okay. We do that. There are no mistakes. There's no way you can do the work wrong. What I suggest is that people judge someone else, not themselves yet, and you may find out that you're the someone else. It's all equal, so let's hear what you've written.
Okay. I'm angry at Marilyn.
That's you?
That's me. Because she is the way she is. I want Marilyn to be free. I want her to get over many fears and her anger.
So what are you afraid of, honey?
I think I'm afraid of participating in life.
What's an example? Tell me more. I want to know.
Well, for example, getting a job, having sex.
Yes. So, what would be the most frightening thing for you around sex? What's the worst thing that could happen if you were having sex?
Well, that I could freak out. I could just lose it.
Okay. Let's say you're having sex and you absolutely lose it. That's what most women want when they have sex.
I can't believe I'm saying this. I don't think this is going where I want it to. Maybe we should start all over again. I thought we were going to talk about spiritual things.
Oh, God is everything, but not sex. Is that true?
Oh, I think we should start over. Don't you?
No, that was you thinking that. It wasn't me.
How about if I read some of the other ones?
Sweetheart, this discussion is part of life, and you're participating very well.
Oh, I can't believe I said that part. I have all these other things I could have said.
There's no mistake, Angel. So I would like you to look out at the audience, okay? How many of you are really happy that this woman is participating? Look. Look down there at those faces. You see the very thing that you think won't work does work. Maybe it's backward. Maybe you've been participating fully and haven't been aware of it. You are so beautiful. You're so beautiful in your shyness, and you just want to go back to these written words so you can get some control.
Yeah.
But what's happening now is just like sex. You don't have control. And everyone is falling in love with you. That's the innocence we're so attracted to. There's no control in it. It's a wonderful thing. It's like an orgasm.
I can't believe you said that word. I'm so embarrassed. Can we talk about something else?
You can't believe I said that word? Is that true? No, I did say it. I said the word. Losing control can be wonderful, sweetheart.
What about the fear?
What fear? You mean your embarrassment?
No, it's worse than that. It's terror.
Sweetheart, you are in terror. Is that true? The feeling that you feel now is terror. Can you really know that that's true?
No.
Who would you be without your story that you are in terror? So let's move back and do one at a time. You're talking about something that you don't want to talk about in front of a room full of people, and you're feeling...
It's worth it. If it will get me to freedom, I'll do anything.
Yes, honey. Good. Then let's do inquiry. This is what I know. I am here to give you four questions that are kind enough to leave your freedom to you, not me.
Okay.
Okay. So are you willing to answer my questions?
Yes.
I want to know more about your embarrassment. How does being embarrassed feel? How does it feel in your chest, in your stomach, in your arms, in your legs? How did it feel physically to sit on this couch and feel embarrassed?
I feel heat in my head. And in my tummy, there's lots of energy, kind of going like that.
Uh-huh. Good. So that's the worst that can happen? If you talk about the most frightening topic on stage, the worst that can happen is what you've described? A few fireworks going on in your tummy and a little heat in your head? Can you handle it?
But what if my mom and dad were here?
You feel a little heat in your head and a little movement here in your...
I think I might just faint or black out.
Okay, good. You could faint or black out, and then what would happen?
I'd wake up, and then I'd... What if I were still here?
What's the worst that could happen? You'd still be here. And notice that you're still here right now. You're already surviving the worst that could happen.
And life goes on, and I'm still myself. I'm still the way I am.
In what way is that?
Not free. I'm caught in my stuff.
Sweetheart, what does freedom look like?
Kind of like you.
I would take that to inquiry later. Write it out. Katie is free. Can I absolutely know that that's true? How do I react when I believe that thought? Put it down on paper and follow it through.
I know. I'm really caught up in my stories about this personality and my body and...
Let's go back to inquiry now, so that you don't avoid realizing what you already know. What you already know can set you free from fear. Answer this. If your parents were sitting here now...
Oh, God, I know. I'm 47, and I shouldn't even be worried about that.
Well, of course you should be worried about it, because you are. That's reality. You're so beautiful. If your parents were sitting here, what would they be thinking?
Well, they'd probably be mortified that I'm talking about these things out here in public.
So they'd be mortified.
Uh-huh.
Can you really know that that's true?
I can guess pretty well.
You can guess that it's true, yes. And I'm asking you to answer the question. Can you absolutely know that it's true that your parents would be mortified?
Inwardly, on the deepest, from the perspective of... If they were dead and looking down on me, I can imagine it, but in every other way.
Are you interested in inquiry?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Is it true that you're sorry?
Well, I'm kind of getting off on the track of my drama.
So just answer the question. Is it true that you're sorry? Yes or no? When you said, I'm sorry, Was it true that you were sorry?
I was more ashamed that I got off track.
What if you had to answer yes or no? You were sorry, is it true?
I think the words just came out. No, I don't know.
Sweetheart.
Ugh, I'm trying so hard and I'm just not getting this.
So let's go back a little, okay? It takes just a yes or no. And please don't worry about giving the right answer. Give the answer that you feel is true for you, even if you think it's wrong. And honey, there isn't anything serious to worry about ever. This isn't a serious thing. If self-realization didn't make things lighter, who would want it?
Okay.
This is about asking yourself. If your parents were in this audience, they would be mortified. Can you absolutely know that that's true?
In the biggest picture, I can't. I mean, no.
Good. You almost gave a straight answer. So you could hear it yourself. It doesn't matter what I think. You gave an answer for you to hear. This is self-inquiry, not inquiry for me or anyone else. How do you react when you think that your parents would be mortified if they were in the audience?
I censor things. I censor my life, and I feel angry about this.
How do you live your life when you believe that your parents would be mortified about something you did?
Wow. I've been living my whole life in hiding.
This doesn't sound very peaceful to me. It sounds very stressful.
It is.
It sounds like living in fear, being very careful all your life so that they won't be mortified.
Yeah.
Give me a peaceful reason, a reason without stress, to believe that your parents would be mortified if they were in this room.
It doesn't have to do with peace. There's no peaceful reason.
No peaceful reason. So what would you be with your parents in the room if you didn't believe that thought?
Oh, yeah. Wow. Ah, thank you.
What would you be? Freedom? The joy and laughter of just being yourself.
Oh, yeah. Freedom to be. I would be so blissful and happy right here with you.
Just as you are now?
And with all these beautiful people.
You participate in life very well. So what I'm learning from you is that when you think that thought, you're fearful. And when you don't think it, you're free. What I'm learning from you is that your parents have never been the problem. It's your thinking about them that is your problem. Your uninvestigated belief about what they think or don't think.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? Your parents aren't your problem. That's not a possibility. No one else can be your problem. I like to say that no one can hurt me. That's my job. This is good news.
Oh, I understand. Yes, it is good news.
It leaves you in a position to stop blaming others and to look to yourself for your own freedom, not to them or anyone else.
Yes.
It leaves you responsible for your freedom, not your parents.
Yes.
Thank you. I look forward to our friendship.
There's great liberation in this.
Yes, sweetheart. Yes, there is. When I argue with reality, I lose, but only 100% of the time. Chapter 8. Doing the Work with Children. I'm often asked if children and teenagers can do the work. My answer is, of course they can. In this process of inquiry, we're dealing with thoughts, and people of all ages, 8 or 80, have the same stressful thoughts and concepts. I want my mother to love me. I need my friend to listen to me. People shouldn't be mean. Young and old, we believe concepts that through inquiry are seen to be nothing more than superstitions. Even young children can find the work life-changing. During one children's workshop, a 6-year-old girl got so excited that she said, "This work is amazing. Why didn't anyone ever tell me about it?" Another child, a 7-year-old boy, said to his mother, "The work is the best thing in the whole wide world." Curious, she asked, "What is it that you like so much about the work, Daniel?" When I'm scared and we do the work, he said, then afterward, I'm not scared anymore. When I do the work with young children, the only difference I'm aware of is that I draw from a simpler vocabulary. If I use a word that I think might be beyond them, I ask them if they understand it. If I feel that they really don't understand, then I say what I mean in another way. But I never use baby talk. Children know when they're being talked down to. The following excerpt is from a dialogue I had with a 5-year-old girl.
There's a monster under my bed.
There's a monster under your bed, sweetheart. Is that true?
Yes.
Sweetheart, look at me. Can you absolutely know that it's true?
Yes.
Give me your proof. Have you ever seen the monster?
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
Now the child is beginning to laugh and warm up to the questions, beginning to trust that I'm not going to force her to believe or not to believe. And we can have fun with this monster of hers. Eventually, the monster has a personality, and before the end of the session, I'll ask the child to close her eyes, talk to the monster face to face, and let the monster tell her what he's doing under the bed and what he really wants from her. I'll ask her just to let the monster talk and to tell me what the monster said. I've done this with dozens of children afraid of monsters or ghosts. They always report something kind, such as, he says he's lonely, or he just wants to play, or he wants to be with me. At this point, I can ask them, sweetheart, there's a monster under your bed. Is that true? And they usually look at me with a kind of knowing amusement that I would believe such a ridiculous thing. There's a lot of laughter. It's so simple to move to the next question at any point. For example, how do you react at night in your room when you think the thought that there's a monster under your bed? How does it feel when you think that thought? Scary? I get scared? Here they often begin to squirm and fidget. Sweetheart, who would you be lying in bed at night if you couldn't think the thought there's a monster under my bed? I'd be okay, is what they usually answer. I love at this point to say to children, what I learned from you is that without the thought, you're not afraid, and with the thought, you are afraid. What I learned from you is that it's not the monster that you're afraid of, it's the thought. This is such good news. Whenever I'm frightened, I know that I'm just frightened of a thought. Parents always report that after the session, the nightmare stops occurring. I also hear that parents don't have to talk their children into coming back to see me. We share an understanding together as a result of inquiry. I once worked with a 4-year-old boy, David, at his parents' request. They had been taking him to a psychiatrist because he seemed so intent on hurting his baby sister. They always had to keep track of him. Whenever he had the chance, he would attack her, even in front of the parents. He would poke her, pull her, try to push her off surfaces, and he was old enough to know that she would fall. They saw him as seriously disturbed. He was getting angrier and angrier. The parents were at their wits' end. In our session, I asked David some of the questions on the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet, and the mother's therapist wrote down his answers. The parents did the work in another room. When they returned, I had them read their worksheets on each other in front of the child so that he could understand that there would be no punishment for expressing his feelings honestly.
I'm angry at the new baby because I have to change her diapers all day long and can't spend more time with my David. I'm angry at Dad because he works all day and can't help me change diapers for the new baby.
Both mother and father continue to judge each other and the baby in front of the little boy. Then it was David's turn to hear his statements read out loud. I'm angry at Mommy because she spends all her time with Kathy. I'm angry at Daddy because he's not home enough. Finally, we heard his statements about his little sister.
I'm angry at Kathy because she doesn't want to play games with me. I want her to play ball with me. She should play with me. She shouldn't just lie there all the time. She should want to get up and play with me.